courtside in the virtual hardwood, it's the NLFC podcast, episode number 327. Andrew with you once again, joined once again by Derek, aka Deeper3 in the forum.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me again.
Once again, last week I tagged the wrong account initially on my first tweet out of the episode 326, but I actually deleted it this time and tagged you properly in last week's show, so my apologies to the fake Deeper3 and no followers for him this week.
You know what, though? It didn't really help him last time. I don't think he gained a single follower from the mistag. So I think at this point, it wouldn't really matter. But no, because you left the other tweet out there.
I did.
The one that had the wrong one. It was like a good test, too, to see, you know, could he gain any extra followers? But it didn't work, so.
It's one of those things where the original tweet actually got likes and retweets, so I kind of left it up there because people had already shared it and whatnot. But it didn't work out for him. But this time around, I corrected myself, and hopefully for episode 327, I will do it the right way and tag you the first time, see if I can do that. But yes, here we are again to talk about basketball video games, specifically the NBA 2K21 trailer this week, the announcement of the next-gen version at the PlayStation 5 reveal event. This is going to be your first preview season as a member of the NLSC podcast, Derek, and so I hope you're looking forward to all the fun we're going to have this preview season.
No, I'm excited about it. I remember listening to some of the podcasts you had before I joined for, you know, preview seasons for different games and stuff like that, and I like listening to you know, to the commentary and whatnot. I think it's cool to be in at this point to be able to talk about it and share my thoughts. So, yeah, no, thanks for having me on.
Always. And, it's going to be an interesting preview season. It always is, but we're having two generations this time around, presumably. I don't think that 2K is going to drop previous gen, prior gen, the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. I don't see them dropping that within a year. In fact, we might see those releases for 2 or 3 years to come, depending on how things go with the PS5 and Xbox Series X. But yes, we got our first look at the game via in-game assets from a pre-alpha build, is what the disclaimer said on that trailer. It is, I'm sure a lot of people have seen it already. It's posted in the forum, posted on the main page, on all over social media, of course, so it's very hard to miss. It has Zion Williamson, who do we assume that he's going to be the cover player if he's going to be if he's being used like this?
Absolutely, yeah. I think they're going to have Zion Williamson. I think it's a smart choice.
Agreed.
As well, I'm not sure who else I would have chosen that hasn't been, you know, chosen as a cover before. I mean, we talked about, you know, past covers where it was like mid tier guys in the league, like basically, you know, how they had Steve Smith on Fox Sports Basketball. That'd be like the equivalent of them having like Devin Booker on NBA 2K or something like that. So they could always, you know, move in that direction and try to do some mid-tier guys. But I mean, the hype around Zion, the way he played in the games that he played, etc., I think it makes a lot of sense. And you know what, if you think about it, we're talking about a new generation of video games, right? A new generation of,
I was gonna say,
you have your new generation player, the most highly talented generation. So I think it makes perfect sense.
It's thematically, it makes a lot of sense. No doubt, no doubt, no question about that. So yes, Zion Williamson is in the trailer. It's a cinematic trailer using in-game assets. It's using the in-game engine from a pre-alpha build, once again, as the disclaimer on the video says. It shows him on a court by himself, dribbling around, sweating profusely. Very sweaty is Zion Williamson in this trailer, and goes up and dunks the ball, and allegedly, or apparently, rips the rim right out of the backboard as it collapses at the end. But it's a short trailer, about a minute long, and it's cinematic, just showing him dribbling and then going up for that dunk. But it has got people talking, naturally, being the first announcement of the next-gen version of NBA 2K, NBA 2K21, and showing off some of this new tech from a pre-alpha build, of course. But what did you make of that trailer? What stands out to you?
For years, and you can remember this goes back years, you know, people have been talking about, I wish 2K could get NBA Live's net. Well, you might have it. You might finally get the net that you've always wanted for NBA 2K to match the old NBA Live games as far as, like, physics and quality, because the thing that actually stood out to me the most was the net in that Zion trailer. So if you look at it, the net's really good quality, the way it moves and all of that stuff. So, I mean, I think the net physics have been absolutely poor in NBA 2K, especially since 2K18, the last three 2Ks, the nets have no give to them. They don't move there's as much as they should. There's not as many swishes as you know you would like, etc. So I think that will be a good thing. If you want my overall feeling about the trailer, I wasn't, you know, super impressed with the graphics. It's just, you know, it's not enough. Like, I wasn't able to see enough. It's a dark arena. It's the lighting is a little weird. It's a player covered in sweat. And
very sweaty.
I need to see more. Right, it's very sweaty. You know, the first thing when I talked to you about this really briefly before this call is one of the things I looked at was his feet, you know. And obviously they're not going to show something where it looks like he's skating on the floor, but I'm like, you know, looking at his feet and I'm seeing, is he planting? You know what I mean? Like, is the foot planting a little bit better than, you know, what we've had over the last three games? And again, it's just really hard to tell on such a short clip in that type of environment and atmosphere. Because, you know, you also have to, you know, wonder in the back of your mind, you know, how much of this is for show? How much are we getting of real gameplay? And whatnot. And like you had said, it's supposed to be more like a pre-alpha version of the game, and it's supposed to be the real PS5 engine and all of this stuff. But I need to see more.
I agree. It's one of those situations. We've seen videos like this before from pre-alpha builds that are great tech demos of what's possible in the engine. Is it going to be what's the final version of the game? I mean, the OMG trailer and some of those pre-alpha builds of 2K14 did turn out to be pretty accurate. So I think we're going to get something quite like this. As you say, it's not the biggest jump. That was probably going to be difficult after this the last generation, which did make a big jump itself. We're getting to that point where players are getting pretty photorealistic anyway, where their faces are done pretty well or scanned in pretty well anyway. Like you say, the net is fantastic. It really did. The way it just went through on the dunk was about the most realistic net animation I think I've ever seen in some 2K footage. I really liked the rim interaction as well. It really felt like he was grabbing the rim more so than the last gen. So things like that point to some improvements in the rim interactions, rim physics, net physics, etc. It looked pretty good. You know, it's again, it like you say, it's not the biggest jump in what we've seen in the generations. I have no problems with it so much. You know, I'm not the harshest critic when it comes to graphics. I will make allowances as long as the overall gameplay is fine. And really, that remains my biggest concern going into this next generation: legacy issues, gameplay, whether they can get rid of some of those things that have been plaguing games like for years, like skating, etc., and AI issues, of course, individual things like matchmaking or microtransactions, all those things we've talked about before. Those remain bigger issues. This trailer obviously addresses none of those things. It is just a pre-release, very early pre-release, early hype trailer. So it just showing off some of the new tech. It's something that it has been mentioned on the Twitter account to the official NBA 2K Twitter to accompany this this hype trailer, this announcement trailer, is that it's been built from the ground up for PlayStation 5. Built from the ground up, I should say, promising next-gen graphics, next-gen load times, and next-gen power. Now, next-gen load times, if that comes true, then that's certainly overdue. Next-gen graphics, well, there has been some improvements there, obviously. Next-gen power, again, we'll have to see what comes with that. But built from the ground up, I read something like that, Derek, and it sounds good on paper, but then, or indeed on a computer screen in a tweet, but it's something we've heard before. We've heard about new motion systems in 2K18. We've seen how that's worked out for the last few games. And, of course, when 2K14 was built from the ground up, it had some teething problems. And, of course, we lost some modes as 2K14 was launched on the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. So there is a possible drawback to being built from the ground up.
Yeah, so when I read that, it was a... I had, like, a... My first reaction was excitement. because I'm thinking, hey, you know, are we going to get something that gives us a new gameplay experience, you know, that doesn't have a lot of these legacy issues? Maybe it brings its own issues, but it doesn't have the same legacy issues that we've been dealing with. You know, are we going to get enhanced player body-to-body detection? Is there going to be, you know, better foot planning? Is there going to be, you know, is the defense going to be more competent? When I think built from the ground up, I'm thinking new system, right? Like a whole, like, new gameplay system. That's the way I look at
potentially,
it.
Potentially, yeah.
But then part of you also says, well, you know, NBA Sports did that, and, you know, look how NBA Live 14 turned out. They built from the ground up. They tried something completely different. They went completely away from what they were doing before after a long development time, and look how NBA Live 14 showed up.
Exactly.
So I have this thing where I'm excited about that terminology being used. I'm skeptical, and then also at the same time, I'm weary about it. So I'm not... I need to see more. I need to see more commentary on it, like real commentary on it. You know, we talked about this, is even if there was only a slight jump in graphics, what's most important, and we've said this so many times, is that the action between the lines is fun, that it's a good gameplay experience, that it, you know, you get more fun than frustration out of the game. And, you know, if we go back to the trailer and we're talking about the graphics and all of that stuff, that doesn't do anything for me in comparison to seeing actual gameplay video where everything looks sound and fun, and then, you know, getting my hands on the controllers. So it's definitely going to be a long, you know, we have months before we get a true picture of, you know, what to expect.
I agree, and it's difficult not to be cynical when you've been through so many new games and a few generations of games, and I sometimes miss those early days of covering games for the NLSC, because I do feel I have become more cynical, which is not necessarily a bad thing, because it does sometimes lead to being pleasantly surprised by games that are better than you thought, or you know, features that sound like they were gimmicky or they wouldn't work out, and they do actually work out. It's nice to be proven wrong sometimes like that. But at the same time, there is a reason that you come to feel a bit cynical about these things, and you, or at least temper your expectations, because obviously marketing is going to go all out. We saw a second trailer or a hype trailer drop that's basically celebrities reacting to, censoring, you know, the what they're saying. It's basically alluding to all the things that we talk about, you know, who's on the cover, and can you believe they added this, and can you believe they added that, and it's censored, and you and I, we're not fans of that. We'll get to that in a moment. But I really like that point you brought up about Live 14, obviously, and of course the previous motion engines and whatnot, and rebuilding it for 2K14, and then 2K18 bringing in the different system. And we've already gone from the whatever the engine was called for the 360 PS3 era. EcoMotion was the name of the engine that came in at the beginning of this generation for 2K14. In fact, it even showed up there. If you recall, 2K14, it pops up when you start a game, you know, powered by EcoMotion, kind of like a you know, white mic machine broadcast for Dolby surround sound or something. Then it's gone to, I believe, the Flowtech engine for 2K18 to 20 so far. Now, throughout all those engines, we are still seeing the legacy issues, and much like we've seen legacy issues across different engines for NBA Live, because at the end of the day, 2K and EA, they are designing their basketball games a certain way. So even if they do bring in new technology, if the design philosophies are the same, if they're still doing the same kind of things and using that engine to make the same kind of basketball game, those legacy issues are going to be ported across to some extent, especially when they reuse animations and things like that.
Well, I want to know, you know, whatever happened to the nanotechnology motion system? You know, yeah. Remember nanotechnology?
Oh, yeah. Whatever happened. That was going to put us all out of business.
Yeah. I mean, when I saw those screenshots next to what we have on this gen, I was like, how can 2K not pick this up? But nanotechnology will always be legendary in the NLSC forums now.
It's right up there with, I cannot believe, my starting five for the amongst the older generation of forum denizens, yeah.
Yeah, and me being called what was that? That for the in 2K17, I was called a fraud. Did it by the Zion Vane handle? That thread was unbelievable. The guy that kept telling me to show me the deeds and and all
Oh,
that
show you the
stuff.
deeds. Yes, that's right. I don't know when you're going to show us the deeds, D. You know, deeds for three.
I guess those three roster releases, which, you know, got downloaded by a lot of people and people liked them. I guess those weren't the deeds.
Yeah.
So, and I guess the tutorial videos I put out for NBA 2K17 showing the processes of certain modding techniques and stuff was not enough either. So, whatever. I don't know. You can't please everybody.
No,
obviously.
You won't show the deeds, and I'm a terrible mofo apparently. So,
I mean, people blog about you, so you know what are we going to do about that?
I'm internet famous. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. You don't even need the Bulls decal and the Andrew NLSC on your Toyota Camry.
Yeah. Hey, you know, if you're going to blog about me, at least get my surname right. You know, if you're going to rip into somebody, at least rip into the right person. Gee.
Exactly.
Anyway, sorry. Go on.
No. So I agree. I think part of the thing is you've heard so many times through pre-release cycles and developer blogs and all of this stuff how they. You know, they built, like you said, they built the game from the ground up, or they built the motion system from the ground up, or, you know, where they're, you're expecting, you know, a whole new gameplay experience. How many times have we heard that? You know, a whole new gameplay experience and stuff like that. And then you find out that when you actually get into the gameplay is mostly the same, or the changes were negative on the game, or the legacy issues that persisted are still there, or they even brought some legacy issues back. Right. So in a good example of that is blow buys have kind of been brought back a bit in 2K20 from 2K18 after they were mostly eliminated in 2K19. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's like, and so it's just tough to gauge. And I think what's going to end up happening is people are going to absolutely be blown away, I think, by the graphics. I think that overall they will. You're going to see YouTubers talking about it. There's going to be new physics stuff, like you said, where, you know, somebody goes up for a dunk and they actually have their hand on the rim and their hand isn't through the rim. You know what I mean? And there's going to be stuff like that. But I'll say again, if they come out poorly from a gameplay perspective, then you're going to get that negative commentary, probably not by IGN or by these quote unquote professional review sites who omit a lot of gameplay issues and they omit microtransaction stuff and all of that. But, you know, from non affiliated YouTubers and other people on social media and whatnot.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. It's, I mean, some people, we alluded to that in a previous show, and I think it's something we perhaps will cover in more detail at some point, the reviews that could definitely stand to go into more detail. And it is a shame that they don't talk about those issues, because they are absolutely important. And glossing over things like microtransactions or a lack of matchmaking. Some of the people that do reviews, here I am talking about it, some of the people who do reviews and say they only played a couple of modes, and certainly you focus on what you like, but I think if you are going to do a full review and score the game, you do need to check out the game in its entirety. And it's for a full, valuable and comprehensive review, I think you really need to at least touch on things and to acknowledge the issues. But I guess that is a topic for another time, perhaps. But I'm seeing a lot of people being very positive about the trailer, and I don't want to rain on anyone's parade here, because there is obviously some cool stuff about it. It is funny that after all these years, that sweat is still the go-to sign of next gen. Like, it's nothing says next gen like a sweaty player, and it's you go back to the Xbox 360, and when that launched, a lot of the games, I think, Live came out on 360, but not PS3 for 06 and 07. From memory, 2K7 was PS3, but 2K6 wasn't. But when you started seeing those pre-release videos and everything, it was all about the sweaty players. Jersey's movement as well was a big one back in the day, and that was very rubbery for a while, but it was still something new, because we didn't really see that on the PS2 era. I think a couple of games did, but it wasn't very common. But sweat seems to be...
Well, 2K6 was PS3. I have 2K6 for Xbox 360.
360, not PS3.
They didn't release one for PS3?
I'm pretty sure 2K7 was the first on PS3. I know 08 was the first live on PS3. They did actually. They were producing 07 for PS3, and there was actually footage of it at a PlayStation event, or possibly E3, certainly during a PlayStation demonstration. But they ended up cancelling the PS3 version of 07 because it just wasn't working out. So that, yeah, it wasn't until 08 that they launched live on the PS3. I think 2K7. I'll double check myself before we finished recording. But I know that it didn't have. I'm pretty sure 2K6 wasn't the first.
You know what? That's crazy. It's mind-blowing to me that I didn't know that. There were actually two things, and you'll remember this, that were a huge talking point and deal for 2K6 on Xbox 360. One, hair movement. Two, jersey movement. Those two things were talked about constantly. Remember Nash's hair moved? Like, it was like, it actually had, he had hair physics.
Yep.
And then they had the jersey, the enhanced jersey movement. And you can see this in some of the, like the IGN review of it and all of that stuff. I don't remember it being as much about the sweat, but I do absolutely remember it being about the hair movement and the jersey movement, which is funny because if you remember correctly, we moved into PS4 territory and I think it was 2K15 or 2K16 that had Dirk Nowitzki's hair moving when the game was first released, and then they realized that the system was having issues with it, so they removed the hair movement. I think it was 2K16 or 2K15. I can't remember which one. So it's like, oh, yeah, we moved on to a new gen, but, yeah, we gave you hair movement on 2K6 on Xbox 360, but we can't give you hair movement on 2K16
or 2K15. Right, yeah.
So that's odd. But, yeah, the sweat thing is getting a little ridiculous because – during the preview season, we've seen this for like a decade, maybe, especially more though on this gen. They've gone from, they'll post side by side pictures of the new game with this like ridiculously sweaty player and this lighting where it's like looking up at them and you can see like stadium lights and all of this stuff, and it's this like glamorous photo next to a completely, you know, a different angle of a player not sweating, the same player, and where the stadium lights aren't on the player the same way, and it's like, oh my god, look how much better this looks.
Yeah, every year. And it's not
super manipulative.
Yeah, it's not bullshotting in so much as I don't think there's any Photoshop going on in most of them, but it is definitely manipulated, as you say. They've taken the screenshot from later in the game when the player has built up sweat, as you say, from a cinematic angle where the lighting hits it just right to really accentuate that, and they will take a rather mundane screenshot from the last game from tip-off or near enough to it before the players are really sweating. So it's not a very direct comparison. If it was the same point of the game for both of them, it's we do say that every year though. And by the way, I have just looked that up. Yes, 2K6 didn't come out on PlayStation 3, just PS2, Xbox, and the first one on 360.
That's crazy. Again, like I didn't even realize that. Of course, I had the 2K6 for 360, and I have it out in the other room. So no, that's crazy. I wonder, I think
it's the same situation that Live hit. I think that there might have been some issues developing for the PS3 early on in its life cycle. I'm remembering something vaguely about that, and feel free to correct me, people, in the on social media or in the comments section or in the forum about this. But I do have a vague recollection that was one of the reasons that the Live didn't come out until 08. There were still some teething problems with getting the hardware to work as they, you know, to harness the hardware as they wanted to. I think 2K7, if I look at, referring to our very own wiki here, which you can find on the NLSC, yes, 2K7 is the first one that came out on PS3, so they did beat Live to the PS3. Yeah, but I think there were some issues developing for that hardware originally.
Just to let you know, the as far as that, I don't think that would ever happen now. You would never get NBA 2K21 releasing on just the PS5 and not, or vice versa, on the Xbox One X or whatever. The other thing that I was thinking about, and I don't think that this is going to happen, but it crossed my mind, and I'm sure it crossed yours, is, you know, we obviously think about PC and PC modding. You know, for some people who are listeners, for most of our listeners, they probably already know this, but like 2K14 obviously was released as a last-gen title for the PC. And I'm wondering what they're going to do this time around.
I've been wondering that too, yeah.
You see, you know, are we going to get the PS5 version? And I'm thinking that because we're in 2021, you know, 2K21, excuse me, I think that we're going to get the next-gen version for PC. I think that it's a different time. I think the tech is different. I think we're ready. But it has crossed my mind if they which version that they would release for the PC.
That that discussion has been going on in various places, including, of course, the NLC forum. It's been brought up by Mickey92, I believe. Shout out to you. I actually think that there's a possibility that the same thing will happen as 2K14, because we're again looking at a situation where the last-gen version is probably going to come out earlier in the year than the next-gen version. So I could see the PC version, for simplicity's sake, continuing to be a port of that version, and all of those versions coming out in, what, September or October, perhaps? Maybe, of course, with the season being delayed and just about to start up and going to be finishing in October. I mean, that could change things as well. It may all come out at the same time, especially if the new season does start up around Christmas time, as they're talking about. But if it does come out first, if it significantly earlier than the release of the new consoles and the next gen version, I could see it still being that PC version, just for simplicity's sake as well. But I think it'll be the same situation as 2K15 was, that the very next year for 2K22 we would get the PC port would be the current gen version or next gen version. I could see that happening.
I think that it would be a bonus for the modding community to. I know that people want to say, well, we already have the tools and we'd be able to mod 2K21 if it was still, you know, the PS4 version. Like, I know that people like that thought process of it, you know, like, oh, we could just jump in and use our existing tools and we can make rosters and exactly. All that stuff. I actually think it's more beneficial for us to get the next gen version earlier, so we can get, you know, off the ground running. So we can start modding earlier, so we can start figuring things out earlier. I think that I would much prefer that, because you know what ends up happening. 2K21 for the PS4 is going to be almost the same gameplay-wise as 2K20, because that's what they do, right? They want people to move on to the new consoles. They're going to use, you know, to the new system. They're going to want to use the, just like they did with 2K14, 15, 2K16, 2K17, and 18 for the PS3. The PS, yeah, exactly, for the PS3. They kept basically the exact same gameplay for every single game. So, you know, they're going to probably do that exact same thing if they keep making those games for PS4. Would you agree?
I'd agree. Yeah. I think that is very likely.
Yeah. So basically, my point about that is, wouldn't you rather have that new experience and get off the ground running, you know, modding the new gen, rather than having basically the exact same gameplay experience as what you already had on 2K20, you know, and trying to mod 2K21 and forward? That's just the way I look at it.
It goes back to something that I've mentioned on the show before, and it's come up in the forum a few times as well in discussions over the years. But it does seem like some people would rather have a moddable game than a top-quality playable one. And I think that I would rather mod a really good game than mod a broken game. Even if the broken game is more moddable, you know, do you want to play with those mods if the game is broken? Probably not. And then you're just spending a lot of time to make something that people look at, which still has value and people enjoy, but it really has to come down to that the quality game first and then creating mods for it second. And I know that seems blasphemous to say in a modding community like ours, but it only makes sense. Why would you want to put that much work into a broken game? I know we have over the years and tried to make broken games less broken with varied results, mixed results over the years, but I do think we the sooner we can get onto that new generation, the better. And as you say, there is a benefit to having that old last-gen version with the existing tools, that we don't need to do it. But we are going to have to do it eventually, aren't we? We're going to have to upgrade those tools, get new tools, get new techniques, to find out how to mod that new game as best we can. It's going to happen eventually. It might as well happen sooner rather than later and figure out what we need as far as computers, processing power, etc. Yeah, it just remains to be seen what they do, and hopefully they don't go away from the PC platform, because that would really That would really suck.
Right. I'm not a fan of... I hope not. I mean, I wouldn't expect them to do it. I think they understand the importance of modding and showing off the games in that light. And do you, like Operation Sports, if you go onto their screenshot section and their highlight section, probably 90 to 95% of the content there is PC. Mm. It's PC modded, PC scoreboard with PC lighting, with all of this stuff. And you look at guys like Don. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Same with ours, with the video section and the screenshot section and all that stuff. And the majority of our commentary, obviously, is a modding community. But, you know, you look at influencers like Dom2K and other people who have tens of thousands of followers who are constantly promoting the mods. And as much as you and I are both very indifferent to, you know, the likes of like Brian Mazique, he's constantly, you know, promoting and through articles via Forbes, you know, new modders and modders like Arteezy and Shuajoda and their Kobe faces and all of this stuff. Modding isn't as big of a secret as it used to be.
No, not as niche.
And yeah, it's not as niche as it used to be. And it's become very well known in a lot of circles. And I think it's a great way to promote the game. I think that they look beyond the sales of PC probably and see the bonus they get as far as advertising with modding. So I don't think they're going to go away from the PC version. But as far as you were talking about, as far as like, oh, we already have existing tools, but you know, we're going to have to do it eventually. I'm not a fan of delaying the inevitable, right? Mm. We're going to have to, like you said, we're going to have to go on to, you know, we're going to get the next gen version eventually for the PC, whether it's this year or next year. And I'd rather get it started now.
Well, let's look at this. So let's say 2K21 built from the ground up with next gen power and everything. Let's say that results in a great game of basketball, great modes, matchmaking in the online modes, great content coming through in my career and my team, or if they rebrand or whatever, great content coming through, gameplay jumping forward with new enhanced AI animations, feels great on the sticks, great game. Would you rather play that one and struggle a bit to mod it at first and, you know, have to relearn this, or would you rather keep playing the older last-gen game with all its problems, but oh, it's moddable? Again, I think a lot of people would pick the latter. I'm going to pick the former because at the end of the day, I want to play a game that's a good experience, and there's only so much modding can do. And if a game is, again, I mean, you could create the greatest mod for NBA Live 08 PC, and we have created some pretty good mods for 08 PC, but it is, you know, the last PC release of NBA Live. And it's pretty sloppy. It's got a lot of issues. The season mode, the sim engine is completely broken. So if you make a great season mod, a great update, it's not going to get not very good simulated stats. There's a lot of gameplay issues where you can't move the player properly on free throw. After the free throw goes up, you're strapped to the lane. I'm sure having played NBA Live on PC that you probably remember some of these things. And it is very moddable, which is nice, but then so is 06, and 06 is a better game. Now, that's going backwards, of course, but let's say they brought out NBA Live 10 on PC. It would have behooved us to move on to trying to mod NBA Live 10 or 09 or 10 next-gen and learn how to develop tools and learn how to mod that game rather than stick with the more easy-to-mod, more familiar 08 just because it's more moddable, but it's nowhere near the same game, the same quality of game, I should say. And this, in theory, could be the case with 2K21 coming from PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X. If it is the better game, then that is the game we should have. We should have the game and learn how to mod that rather than have a moddable game that we try and learn how to enjoy, if that makes sense.
Well, there's two parts of this. There's one thing that's getting really lost in this is the element of discovery, the fun aspect of the discovery, the eureka moments that happen when you're modding a new game. Do you know how fun that is? You know how fun it is to even see other people discover that stuff?
Oh, yeah.
You understand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like going to the NLC modding section for a new game and seeing that Luya created a new tool, or, hey, guess what, guys? We can load this model. Even something as simple as, hey, guys, we can load this model in Blender now. Mm. Hey, did you know that we can export this model in Blender? Like, this is unbelievable. Oh, wait, we can edit players now? oh, wait, Luya came out with a one court template, like a one texture court template.
Yeah.
You're telling me we make courts now? And that's how all of this happens, right? Oh, okay, so maybe we have humble beginnings where we can only overwrite, you know, the current teams, but we can make players and courts. Oh, wait, we can get single season mods now? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, all of this is unbelievable. Like, look at the amazing single season mods that got made for 2K10, like 96, 97 mod and whatnot. That was just overriding the game's assets and overriding the current, you know, the regular teams. Look at the mod, the 91, 92 mod that got made for 2K11. That was using just overriding the current teams. But guess what? They could do it. So you're telling me that that's not more exciting on, like you said, a better gameplay experience, like a new game, a fresh new game, being able to do that? Like, that wouldn't be better than, you know, modding the last gen version. So I agree 100%. I think people need to think about the excitement of the discoveries too, of like modding a new game.
And it's not like we don't have creative minds in our community. Obviously, Greg K. Waste, it hasn't been around for a while, but making the Explorer that ended up being compatible with that moving forward, with a few games moving forward. And, you know, you look at some of the discoveries that somebody like TG So Good, and shout out to TG for all the work he's done with tutorials and whatnot, but he's always finding something new and looking to find something new. It was something that John Jasping did a lot, and that's why, you know, he was so influential in our modding community. But there's other people who have taken up that mantle, like TG. And I'll admit that with me stepping back from the modding community over the past few years, or 5 to 10 years, I guess, and not really getting to the 2K stuff, I haven't been as active as far as being trying to push that. And even when I was more active, it was people like Jiao Ming that were really like, okay, is this possible? Let's exhaust every possibility and try and get something to work. And to that point, you know, when I found out how to blank out career stats in 2K11, and finding a guaranteed way of doing that, I'm sure somebody else has figured that out at some point, but there was no information about it in the forum. I felt very excited to discover that and to share that information and do a tutorial for it. In fact, I've got a tutorial out for 2K11 before I've even released a mod for 2K11. But it's, as you say, that excitement and that the perseverance trying to, and getting that solution at long last, when you can get a solution, of course. It's frustrating when you come up empty and disappointing, but if you keep working at it, sometimes you can find these solutions. It is what we have to do at some point, so better late than never. And if it's getting a better game, then I'm always going to opt for that better game over a worse game that's moddable.
Yeah, I think one thing that, and I want to give a good example. Yeah, first off, like all the tutorials, like when I first started getting into modding and you know, joining the NLSC and all that stuff, the Jiao Ming stuff and all of that, and the discoveries. And remember how excited you would get on his videos about the discoveries and about, you know, being able to create courts and all of that stuff. Even just the basic tutorials were super exciting. So that stuff never gets old.
Yeah.
But I want to give people an example of a good way to look at this. If we had had 2K14 next gen, you know, instead of past gen, yeah, first off, we did get the UBR for 2K14, but we had already had it for 2K12, if people remember correctly. And we had the URB for 2K13. If we had had the 2K14 next-gen port to the PC, then imagine how much better modding would have been for 2K16, which is one of people's favorite games in the entire series. We were very limited in 2K16 because we hadn't, you know, we were behind a year. But we may have been able to put together some amazing mods and amazing season mods and all of that stuff for 2K16 if we had had that extra year of modding and experience and learning the you know, making tools and all of that stuff. So I want people to think about it that way. 2K16 is probably one of the most endeared, one of the most popular games in the entire game series. And we actually had very limited modding knowledge and tools for that game, and it would have been amazing to have some like single season mods and all of that stuff, and we may have been able to do that if we had that one more year under our belts.
And I understand wanting to go for the game that feels simpler to mod. There's a reason that I'm looking at this 2K11 mod that I'm, you know, still working on, and would love to do some more stuff on that once I get this current roster out, is that it is very straightforward to do. Redditor makes it very easy to edit the rosters, more so than messing around with Cheat Engine and whatnot on the newer games. So I understand, but at the same time, we do have to move forward, and it is important that we have people in the community that are pushing those improvements. And again, people like TG, as you said, Luya, etc., are doing such a great job of that. So hopefully it does come to, you know, we don't have to wait, especially if it is such an improved version. My only concern is that it would be very easy for them to continue to port to the PC version, port the PC version from Xbox One and PlayStation 4 version. So I could see that happening, but that's something we'll find out during the course of the previous season, of course. And yeah, I mean, the fact that it happened before doesn't mean it's going to happen again. And the architecture is very similar, so it's probably not going to be as much of an issue. Maybe if they're concerned whether the specs need to be high, if they can't optimize it or whatever, that could be an issue there, but we will wait and see. Getting back to that second promotional trailer, the one that came out with all the bleeps and everything, the censorship to make fun of, you know, there's lots of information that's going to be dropped, but we're not going to let you in on it yet. You're going to have to wait. The teasing of an announcement, the teasing of an announcement almost. And again, I think you and I both saw what they were trying to do with that, but it just came across as a bit cheesy and obnoxious and kind of annoying more than anything else for me. And I know that you felt similar when we were talking about that.
Yeah, I thought it was I thought it was cheesy, and it didn't. It was really like it almost made it feel like aha, you don't know this type thing. Like, you know, and kind of rubbing it in people's faces. I just wasn't really a big fan of it. I also don't like the whole bleeping out thing, you know, constantly throughout a video. I mean, it's constantly through that thing. And I, like you said, I understand what the goal was, but it's almost like this whole, you know, bleeping out. What do you think of when you think of bleeping out? Swearing.
Profanity, right? Yeah.
Yeah, profanity. You think about you're bleeping out profanity and swear words and all of that stuff. I'm just not 100%. I'm not 100% sure that it was in like the best taste. I don't really. I'm not a fan of that ad. For those two reasons, that it almost seemed like they were, you know, rubbing it in people's faces. And whether that's good marketing or not, I really don't care. And the whole bleeping out thing, which is really a staple of blocking out profanity.
I think for me, the best thing I can say about it is that it didn't get me excited because it didn't tell me anything new. It just said there's going to be a bunch of stuff that's going to be told over the course of the preview season. I already knew that. That's what the preview season's for.
Right. I mean, here's the thing. I understand the way advertising has worked in the past for preview seasons, and we understand that, you know, oftentimes we don't get real gameplay or anything up until like really close to when
very
the game
close,
is released.
Yeah.
Very close, like super close, like within 30 days of when the game is released. Sometimes even closer to release. And I think that I understand the tactics behind it. I understand that it's all about getting as many pre-orders as possible, you know, from people that haven't even touched the game, right? Haven't even seen gameplay. They don't have a true first impression, but they can get, you know, all of those people on board before even trying the game. So whether they like it or not, those people pre-order, right? So I understand like the business side of it and stuff, but it doesn't make me, you know, on board or appreciate those practices any more just because I understand like the money side and the business side of it.
Yeah. It's, if anything, it makes us more cynical because we can see what's going on.
Exactly. And I think we've talked about this in the past, you know, on the forums and everything. And obviously you and I are not alone in that thought process. You can see people getting frustrated about it, and you can see it on Operation Sports too.
It's maybe it doesn't appeal to us grumpy old men, grumpy old heads, but it isn't just us. As you say, there are people that are very aware of these tactics. I think that cynicism is rightfully earned, and it is something that permeates gaming culture these days because we have seen it before. We have seen the bullshotting, the pre-alpha videos that haven't turned out to be accurate once it has to be a full, more than just a tech demo, but a full gameplay experience that's being both shown off and then placed in our hands when the game comes out. So people are very aware of these tactics and being disappointed. You look at something like Watch Dogs where they did the demonstration and then they when it came out, it just wasn't what people have been sold on, and of course that you know, even if the game itself was, I haven't actually played it, I must admit, but even if the game was fairly solid, very good in some respects, it wasn't what it was sold as, and that's where the cynicism and the lack of trust comes in.
Yeah, and remember, you know, we've talked about like the developer blogs and stuff and what things, you know, what they're sold as. Remember we talked about, hey, we've improved the skating, or I've even seen we've eliminated the skating.
Yeah.
And stuff like, yeah, exactly. And we've seen, you know, we have better, how many times have we heard that they've had better body-to-body detection? Like, less clipping, basically. And then you get into the game, and then your guys are, like, going through players. And, like, arms are going through players. And all of that stuff. And, you know, how many times have we heard that, you know, defense has been shored up? Like, yep. that defense is more sound, and that they have these, and they'll use terms that say, you know, we've, you know, you're basically saying, you know, we've been able to make the defense sharper and smarter, and the AI is smarter and all of this stuff. And then you get into the game and it doesn't reflect that. So, I mean, we've been duped before. And unfortunately, as you and I have talked about, 2K is the only true good basketball gaming option right now. And as many people are as duped, and they know that they've been duped, they're still, you know, 2K is still going to get their sales.
One of the biggest, I don't like to use the word lie, but certainly, you know what, it's probably the fairest word to use considering the situation. But in the developer blogs, talking about how they've changed the procedural awareness of defenders and the AI defenders so that they can only see what they're looking at, that they can't see, no eyes in the back of their heads, and so that now you can beat the defender if they've got their back turned to them, if they've got their back turned to you, rather. And this was something, I think, was it 2K18 or 19 might have said that in the gameplay blog, so I'm trying to remember which one. But if you play 18, 19, 20, the psychic steals are still there. The very obvious can turnovers are there, where you pass it directly to the defender, or you see the defender being able to suck the ball in when they're not even looking at the ball, or they stick their hands out and still make that psychic steal. That is a legacy issue that goes back to at least about 2K10, 2K11, if not earlier. And again, we're talking about different engines there, at least two or three different engines so far over the past 10 years that have had that issue of psychic steals, plus all these guarantees that psychic steals and whatnot have been eliminated. Yet here we are with rebuilt, you know, built from the ground up technology. And once again, we're looking at built from the ground up for PlayStation 5 and probably Xbox One, you know, obviously Xbox Series X as well. Rebuilt, but if it's still going to have that same approach to defensive AI and everything, then we're going to see that legacy issue still happen. We're still going to see those psychic steals, because how many times have we heard that they've been eliminated, that procedural awareness matters, that the players can only see what they're looking at, what their faces, you know, they don't have eyes in the back of their heads, they don't have the psychic abilities, and yet they still make those steals. You've still got players stepping into the lane, you've got Enes Kanter, picking off passes like Michael Jordan in his prime, all kinds of plotting centers just playing the passing lanes very adeptly and with very quick hands and whatnot, when controlled by the CPU, obviously, by the AI. We're still seeing those legacy issues. We've seen them through over at least 10 years and through multiple game engines, at least two or three game engines now. If they're still building it the same way, even if it's built from the ground up, if the blueprint is still very similar, if that's still in their design, in that design philosophy, then we're going to see those legacy issues. And that is my concern, again, that they can show us all the sweaty... they can have Zion Williamson like he's in a sauna, sweat dripping off him and everything. They can have a nice-looking net and everything. That's all important, don't get me wrong. It is very important to make that next-gen leap as far as graphics as well as everything else. But if everything else is the same, and I hope, you know, this is making assumptions based on one trailer and a cynical approach to the last 10 years. But, you know, we have seen some of these issues in the game for at least 10 years or so. So if they are going to build it from the ground up, they definitely need to throw away some of those old blueprints.
My brother, Nick, the psychic steals and stuff like that. My brother, Nick, and myself, I think those are... that's like top of our frustration list.
It feels fake, feels funny.
It happens in basically every game, but I actually feel like it's almost been ramped up over the last couple of years. We play 2K19 and we have a season on that. We're, you know, 10 plus games in, my league, excuse me. And we've been playing 2K20 a little bit more lately and all that stuff. And we had a season where we were 20 plus games in using current assets. Like, I was using the Pelicans and whatnot. We were using the current teams. And the amount of steals where the guy is not facing the direction of the ball or the pass or anything like that, it's staggering. It's happening constantly. In both games, 2K19 and 2K20, the warped steals where a player is like not in position and he's facing the other way, and then all of a sudden his body like jolts to where the ball is going,
or and rebound. He gets the steal.
Yeah, exactly, warp rebounds are constant. But you know, or like you enter the ball into the post where your post player actually has position, and then the defender somehow warps in front.
Yep.
And gets the steal.
Clips through.
And it's like there's like no way to avoid it. Or the my favorite is where the pass goes, and I showed film of this at one point on the NLSC, where you like enter the pass into the post, and it goes directly to the defender's hands. It's like the pass is intentionally. Yeah, it's like this was supposed to be a steal when I threw this pass, right? There was no way for me to avoid this. And this happens on the fast break too, where you like make a pass and instead of it going to the recipient, it's like a canned turnover.
Yeah.
So very, very frustrating. And the other parts of legacy issues that they've talked about removing for years that still persist in the game is body blocks and body steals, where, you know, I can be using like the Hornets or something and I can get like two or three blocks in a game with Muggsy Bogues at the rim, just like with my body being there. You know what I mean? Mm. And the offensive player goes up for, for a dunk, and I'm somehow getting these body blocks with Muggsy Bogues just because he's like in the area, you know, or, you know, body steals where, you know, I, you know, try to round a corner and then all of a sudden my guy just drops the ball. Or like I'm dribbling up the court and there's a defender in front of me and I just drop the ball. So these are things that, you know, you talk about legacy issues and stuff like that, and things that have been mentioned in developer blogs and all of that stuff as fixes. There's quite a few that are still in the game. And then it's like you feel like you're getting lied to because they're still there.
Yeah, so, it sounds it's one of those words that gets thrown around a lot. You know, they lied to us. Sometimes they kind of do. They certainly mislead, if you want to put it as generously as possible, or on some of these legacy issues. Another one that's especially apparent in the last couple of games, 2K20 really in particular, is the discrepancy in speed, that the CPU is much faster than you. It can skate around like it's on rocket skates sometimes while you're running around in mud, it feels. That's really happened with that the motion system. And It's one of those things where I agree that it has gotten worse over the past few years, and it's not that there were never any canned moments in previous games, because again, this is a legacy issue. I think something that has regressed over these past few games is that the smoke and mirrors don't seem to be as effective. It's very, very obvious when there's a canned situation, where back in the day, even around about 2K15, 16, something would happen and people were throwing around canned a lot, and obviously there were canned situations. We don't have true life ball physics at this time. That may be something that's coming on next gen. Maybe they have perfected that next gen technology to give us proper live ball physics. But it's clearly not the case of the past generation. They've kind of tried it and backed away from it. Live did the same thing in 14. In fact, they disabled a lot of the physics in that big patch that came for 14 because things really changed after that. And we could feel that some of that attempts at live ball physics weren't there. But the last couple of games haven't been as good at masking the inner workings, those canned moments. And the problem is, you want to have some kind of error in the game, because if you want to make it as realistic as possible, sometimes players do overshoot the pass, or they fumble a pass, or they do just pass it to the opposition. I'm remembering dazzling dunks and basketball bloopers, obviously. I mean, watched that tape so many times back in the 90s. There's that famous clip of Magic just turning around and throwing it straight to a Blazers player, possibly a Clyde Drexler. I'm trying to remember the exact person in the clip. But it happens, you know, player error happens, human error happens. And that's something that's very hard to represent in a video game without it feeling contrived, because you do have to contrive it to a certain extent by ratings as well as risk making a risky pass, trying to make a risky decision on the sticks, combined with player ratings of success and whatnot. But it feels especially contrived, and more to the point, looks especially contrived over the past few games. And that is something that I'd love to see them address with the new tech, if possible, on the next generation. Because it's, you can see it, and it doesn't feel good when you just see the rebound that you feel like you've boxed out for. It just warps right into the other player's hands because the game has decided this player is getting the rebound based on a combination of input and badges and ratings, etc., and all the attributes that really skew the system, skew the gameplay in the favor of certain players or my player avatars, as the case may be in online play in my career connected modes. But it feels very contrived, and that's something that it really takes away from the experience, because you can see it coming. You immediately go into instant replay and look at it and say, yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Well, it's about control, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Naturally, as humans, we want control. I want to give you kind of an opposite situation as far as, like, it doesn't give you, like, errors, but it's frustrating nonetheless. So an example of something that I want to kind of compare it to is, if you play some certain tennis games, there's certain tennis games where you, like, it's almost impossible to hit the ball out. It's like controlled, like every time you hit the ball, it stays in, and you can end matches with like one unforced error or like no unforced error, like entire matches, like five set matches and stuff. And you're playing these games and you're like, you know, I want to be penalized if I do something wrong, and I want this game to play realistic, and I want there to be an avenue of difficulty that's realistic, right? Like, I want to be able to hit the ball out. And when you're playing NBA 2K, and that's like a control thing, like, you know, I want to be able to have control over my destiny. I don't want the game keeping the ball in bounds every time I hit. And by the way, there's many tennis games like this where it's like impossible to hit it out. But when you're playing the NBA games, you want the control, right? You want the control to be able to control your own destiny. And if you make a mistake, you want to be able to like own up to it and say, you know what, I need to get better.
Yeah.
But with NBA 2K, what happens is there's so many canned moments, and this is with Live 19 too. There's so many canned moments where you don't have that control or that ability to say, I want to get better. You know what I mean? You don't have as much of that ability, and you don't have the control to be able to say, you know what? I did make that pass. That pass I made was a bad pass, and I need to do better next time. Instead, you're looking at it is that pass, you know, I threw the right pass, but it got warped in front and I can't do anything about that. Or I made the right pass and this defender with the eyes in the back of his head was able to bat this down. And I would make that pass again 10 times out of 10 times in real life, but now I can't make it in the video game. You know what I mean?
Spot on.
Because now I'm worried it's going to... So that's kind of a different way of looking at it. But, you know, with those tennis games, how quick does that get old when you lose that element of control? Right, and that element of real challenge,
whether it's success or failure, you want it to come from your input, your actions.
Natural. Right, your actions. You want it to be, you know, what you do on the sticks. So I would rather have a tennis game, you know, for example, I would rather have a tennis game where you can hit it out if you make a mistake and it makes sense when you hit it out. Okay, so you know what? I put too much power on this. I need to lessen the amount of power, as opposed to a game saying, here you go. You know, now every single time you hit, you can't hit it out. So place the ball wherever you want. Do whatever you want on the sticks.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, no question. And to that point, a lot of the turnovers that I've had in probably especially 2K18 to 2K20, it's hard to put a number on it without sounding like I'm exaggerating or really guessing, but it's very rare that I have a turnover in those games where I think, that was on me. You know, there are some where I've tried to make a risky pass and clearly I was too ambitious with it, but others, it's like, you don't even have to go into instant replay. If you do, you can really see it, how contrived that turnover is. But I'm going to say more than half, which is still bad. It really should be much less that you can look at that and say, yes, that was definitely not my fault, that was the game, and being a contrived moment, a canned moment in the game. But I would say at least somewhere over half, at least 60%, possibly up to 75-80% of the turnovers that I get as a playmaker in my career, and even controlling all players in the non-player lock modes, feel like, no, that shouldn't have happened. That was a very contrived moment. And it shouldn't be anywhere close to 50-50 of feeling like you're being robbed like that. Again, it is something that with the tech they've had to have those contrived moments. You haven't been able to have the live ball physics and whatnot to really replicate some of the user error that it should be, or some of the organic moments. But I think the older games, at least round about up to year 2K15 to 17, did a pretty good job of making a lot of those moments feel a bit more organic, look and feel more organic. And that's, if the tech isn't there to really do live ball physics yet, maybe it will be on the next gen, and it'll be really cool to see if they have got that right. But if it isn't, the key is that those smoke and mirrors, the deception, really, the way of making it feel organic while still being controlled under the hood by ratings and tendencies and everything like that, and maybe you're fudging it a little bit just to make sure that there are a few more errors as you would see in a real game. But it's trying to hide those mechanics, to mask those inner workings of the game that over the past 3 years with the current motion system have felt very obvious.
Yep, they have. I think that a lot of the issues with 2K18 were very much hidden. I want to say glossed over, not hidden from the player, but you know, they weren't really addressed or talked about. And you quite remember correctly. Yeah, it was the complete opposite. And then what happened was during the 2K19 preview season, they actually admitted to a lot of the issues. Of course, after they've already gotten all their sales and pumped up their game, and of course, that's just business.
It still boggles the mind that didn't get more traction, because that would, they kind of admitted to lying there, and yet people just really glossed over it.
Yeah, remember, and by the way, and we've talked about this many times, but it made all of my, I don't want to call it complaining, but my critiques. You know, it made them very valid for me. You know what I mean? You know, when, you know, you had people like Smoove and Mike Wang and stuff in the developer blog and all of that stuff talking about how blow-bys were a major issue, how the defensive issues were a major issue, and they even brought up skating in it and stuff like that. And it's like, yeah, I talked about this, you know, when the game was released. These were issues. These were major issues. And it made me put the game down. So it did.
The Band-Aid fix for layups, how layups would miss more than they should have, because it was they even talked about how they removed some two-man animations, and they said, oh, this was intentional, this is an improvement. And then the next year admitted, yeah, we discovered a problem with them, we had to remove them, and then had to do a Band-Aid fix so that layups wouldn't be so cheesy. So what was presented the previous year as an enhancement of the gameplay was straight up admitted to be a Band-Aid fix for a big problem with the new motion system the very next year, which, as we said in the previous show, really casts doubt over anything they say moving forward. I mean, on one hand, you appreciate the honesty, but then it kind of pulls back the curtain on the dishonesty, you know?
My brother and I talked about this, though. We were talking about, because we always look at, you know, we look at Steam and we see what's for sale, what deals there are, you know, what games we may want to jump into, whether it's sports or otherwise. And we never believe what we see in, you know, previews or review season, really. You know what I mean? What we need to do is we need to get our own hands on it. And there's been many games where we saw reviews and they were like, oh, this game is great, and this game did exactly what we needed it to, and, you know, IGN pumped it up, and, you know, there's people on YouTube saying, hey, this game is great, and all that stuff, and then we would get our hands on it, we would play it, it wasn't even close to what it was advertised for, you know, what the influencers were saying or the reviews were saying, and it wasn't good for us, and we ended up returning it on Steam. I've returned a lot of games on Steam. That, you know, once I got my hands on it, it wasn't the right fit. So, like I said, the big thing with the 2K21 previews and the preview season is I need to see actual gameplay. And I need to see, you know, 5-on-5 between the lines, real gameplay, regular humans playing. And then I also want to see, you know, I have to get my hands on it before I make a complete critique. So,
you know, last year I made that video, the parody of the 1950s PSA, Clickbait and You, which I'm still quite proud of that video, and I intend to share that again as the preview season tips off for this year, because it is it is still as relative as ever, as important as ever to avoid clickbait, to avoid sharing it and giving it too much credence and whatnot. But of course, the previews themselves, you've also got to be careful about the official previews that are from trusted sources, because the bias, you don't know who's glossing over things for perks, or because they're afraid of losing access and whatnot. And I understand the whole situation there, and I also understand how people can kind of be used when it comes to community events. It's funny, I was looking back at the 2K14 crew mode video that they put out when they were bringing back crew mode for the last gen version of 2K14. This is a slight teaser of next week's Friday Five, actually, of mentioning crew mode. But if you go back and you look at that video, there's a lot of prominent YouTubers who are still around, influencers, and they're talking about how great it is, and crew mode is back and everything. And I was looking at the comments on the video and said, and these guys were lied to, and they kind of were, because crew mode wasn't what people were expecting when it came back in 2K14. It wasn't quite the same mode that they'd really fallen in love with 2K10 and 2K11. In those games, I should say, in 2K10 and 2K11. It wasn't the same mode that they wanted to see come back. In fact, it was more like what Pro-Am is. And in that respect, it did actually predict the future of online basketball gaming. I think that's a great concept that it moved into. But again, it wasn't what was being promised when they said crew mode is back. Crew mode was back, but not as people remembered it or necessarily wanted it. I think now they might have a different opinion. But again, you've got this video with all these influencers who attended a community event, and they're talking about it, and they're hyping it up, and they're saying how excited they are. And I think they probably were genuinely excited, because I've been at community events and I know what it feels like when you see something cool, you just get little snippets of it. You know, there is a certain amount of manipulation there on that part. You're trying to be as honest as possible, both with the developers who are asking for your feedback and with the community who's asking for your impressions. So you're trying to be as honest with all parties involved. But if you do get bad information or something changes between the time that you see the game and it comes out, then suddenly your impressions, and they don't look accurate, and then suddenly you're the one who's put your reputation on the line, and then you look like the liar, which is a real shame, and then which is why I guess people then stick with the company, because the company continues to give them the perks and whatnot, the developer, but then some of the audience has become jaded about you put your credibility on the line, and it's kind of been shot because what you've said has not lined up with what the final product has been. You know, I've been there. Pretty much anyone who's attended a community event has got that to some extent, which is a shame. But it is, yeah, we don't always get the full picture during the preview season, so it's one of those situations where not only avoiding clickbait from content creators and so forth, but looking out for that bias or looking out for something that seems fishy, and even from the official channels of the game, promotional materials, developer blogs, etc., it's and I'm sure we'll be doing this and talking about this more and touching on it as we go through yet another preview season here, as you know. But it's one of those things where you really have to take everything with a grain of salt and temper your expectations a bit and say, okay, this sounds good, this looks good, but is it going to be as good? And you look at a trailer like the NBA 2K21 trailer, and there's obviously some good things about it. Sweatiness aside, there's some other great things, as we said, the net animations and things like that look very promising. But there's so many questions left to be answered during this preview season. And there is cause for cynicism. But at the same time, you don't want to let that weigh you down. You do want to be open-minded, but at the same time, just not let everything in. You know, you need to, and I'm sure we will. I like to think we will. That is definitely the right way to go about covering a previous season like this, is to employ critical thought. You know, be open-minded, but also employ that critical thought as we see that information come through.
It works, right? Especially when there's no competition.
Yeah.
I mean, what are people going to do? What do kids want to do, and young adults? They want to play a basketball video game. They love the NBA. They want updated rosters and all of that stuff. All of the stuff that, you know, we see in the preview season, the hype, all of that stuff, it works. it works, and they know they can get away with it, and you know they know that people are going to pre-order, and they know that the hype will be there no matter what. So no matter how many times people get duped, especially when there's no competition in the space, but no matter how many times people get duped, they're gonna buy. And
you see it every year.
Still,
you know, this is the last 2K game I'm buying. You know, 2K is not getting a single cent of my money anymore. The game is terrible. You know, I don't believe they're going to improve it. You know, you see that. And so there's always hyperbole in that as well. And people will always say it because it gets upvotes on Reddit or whatnot to make such a bold stand. But all the same people that will normally be cynical and take things with a grain of salt and have very tempered expectations and whatnot, suddenly a trailer like this drops and it's like, did you see that? That is awesome. It shows you the power of marketing, and they are very good at it.
Yep, they are. And they are pros at it, not just with 2K either, with just like their other games. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they've been, I mean, they're countless games that they've marketed to perfection. And even, you know, even with like the stuff with some of their releases where it came out after that, it was incredibly deceptive. And, you know, you had people like on YouTube saying, hey, this isn't what we were promised. Mm. Think about the money they made on those games.
Yeah. Substantial.
I mean, yeah. Substantial amount of money. And that goes for a company too, like Bethesda. How do you pronounce it?
Bethesda.
You know, Fallout. Bethesda,
yep.
or whatever. I mean, look at the practices that they've gone away and that they've gotten away with over the years.
Oh yeah.
And look at how many times they have been called out on that. But look how much money they've made.
EA, Activision, Ubisoft. Oh, Ubisoft, as Jim Sterling says. Yeah, it's certainly not just a 2K thing. It is an industry wide thing. A lot of the things that we do criticize 2K for: microtransactions, focus on recovery revenue mechanics, pre-order bonuses and things like that, grinding. They're certainly not 2K specific. 2K does it in some of their other games as well, Take-Two, under the other games under the Take-Two umbrella. But it is very much an industry thing at the moment, no question. It's just that the way that 2K does it is of particular interest to our community, especially being that it is, as you said, the only consistently released basketball game year after year of that quality. And to that point, you know, we brought that up, you bring that up, and the lack of competition in the space. And now as we look to a new generation, NBA Live is, we doesn't look like anything's coming out this year, which means they're probably going to launch next year on next gen, if indeed they are going to come back with NBA Live. It seems like they're going to at some point. They just continue to work on it. But seeing a trailer like this, and again, it's more than just graphics, we've covered that in previous shows. We've covered it on this one, that it is more than just seeing a sweaty player and pull down a rim and hang on a rim and gorgeous net physics and whatever net animations. It is more than that. It's going to take more than that to really show that next gen leap across the board of quality in NBA 2K. But it is already ahead of NBA Live in so many areas. It's come out with this very graphically impressive, or it's certainly impressing people of most people who see the trailer. So when I think of what NBA Live's future is going to look like, we've talked about how NBA Live has to be a strong game across the board. Absolutely. We don't need to go into that again in detail. But I think one thing, as much as graphics aren't everything, when you see 2K coming out with these OMG trailers last generation and with this new Zion Williamson reveal trailer, announcement trailer this generation, it just drives home how Live is going to have to make that great first impression. They're going to have to be able to compete with the animations and the facial quality and everything else, the aesthetics. They're going to have to compete with that for 2K just to make that strong first impression, and then start impressing people with their features and gameplay. Because again, people, for all the as we just said, for all the complaints about 2K, it still has a consistent quality about it that people are still getting it, and they're still used to it, and they'll put up with it, and it's still ahead of 2K, Live in so many ways. 2K is that Live needs to make that great impression of looking next gen, and that is something that hurt Live 14 as much as anything else. Is that even before people got on the sticks and found the stiffness and saw how shallow the modes were and everything, they saw what the game looked like. At first, it looked kind of good when we first saw the teaser trailers and the teaser images of Live 14. Then the OMG trailer came along, and 2K looks so much more next-gen. Looking next-gen, even though it is more than just graphics, that you know, the first bite is in the eye, as they say, with you know, with presenting a tasty meal, and so it goes with video games. That you do still have to look next gen. You have to look the part, which 2K obviously does. So Live moving forward, this is what it has to compete with. That first look at 2K21.
Yeah, graphically, Live has to stand out. But as you state, listen, you remember this. So NBA Live 16 actually had a pretty solid first showing. If you remember, they were doing the screenshots for NBA Live 16.
Yep.
And they were like, wow, they've really improved. Like, these graphics hold up. Like, people were like, this looks good. Because if you remember correctly, Live 16 had quite a few scanned faces. I mean, the ones that weren't scanned looked, like, Russell Westbrook looked absolutely terrible in Live 16.
Which is funny because he was the cover player.
Yeah, but if you go back and look at his face, it is just not, it's not what you would, it's just not very good. There's players that have, you know, most of the scan faces look good, but it was like the lighting was really good for Live 16. People liked a lot of the body types and whatnot. But then when they saw the first gameplay videos and they saw the stiff movements, that's when the negativity really started to hit, right? So... like you said, yeah, graphically it does have to pop. Like, and even if it was up to the standard of you know, good commentary that Live 16 had, but when it comes down to getting those first trailers out there and the first movement, more first showcasing of movement and like even 5-on-5 gameplay and whatnot, they have to make a good impression. You know, before the demo comes out, if they have one, you know, before if this is even if they decide to release anything for Live, you know, in the short term.
Yeah.
But they, in order to compete, yes, graphically it has to pop. It doesn't need to be better graphically than 2K, but it has to pop enough to get people to notice it and say, hey, you know what, this is a next gen title.
Yeah.
And then
it's good enough.
And then, right, it's good enough. And then the game, the movement really has to pop. And if you remember correctly, Live 19 had some really positive response as far as the movement.
At least out of the gate.
Out of the gate it did. But if you have to, my opinion is that they didn't market that correctly. You know, I remember a post when NBA Live 19 first came out, and then for the first few weeks of its release, there was a post on the EA Sports thing. They said, you want amazing graphics? You know, you should be getting ESPN NBA Live. No, not ESPN. I'm sorry. You should be getting EA Sports NBA Live 19. You know, for our amazing graphics. That is not the way they should have approached marketing that game in the first few weeks that it came out, or you know, or pre-release. Listen, the big thing with Live 19 was no, the graphics were not as good as NBA 2K19, but the movement was smoother in a lot of ways than NBA 2K19. What they should have been doing is showcasing the motion system that they had for Live 19 and showing different, you know, better gameplay points of view of it and showing highlights and showing like the on-court action. But they didn't do that. They were focusing on the graphics. Like the marketing department was focusing on the graphics, and I didn't understand that.
And the streets.
That doesn't
make
sense.
A lot of it was on the streets as well. Which is,
and it was a lot of it was on the streets and then the one and all of that stuff, but it wasn't the right focus on the gameplay, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it got like good gameplay basically got patched out, so you couldn't really promote that.
And now with this new generation, it's presumably not going to have a launch for this year in fall 2020, so you're going to be coming from behind again. So not only are you missing out on this first next gen of this teaser now we've got an idea of what we're going to see most likely on next gen as far as the games are concerned. So not only are you competing then with this first look at 2K21, but then 2K21 itself is going to come out. And if that is a strong game and it looks as good as people are enjoying about the trailer, if those things are holding up, like the net animations and everything, if that's not just something that's kind of tech demo stuff from the pre-alpha build, if that makes it through to the final version, if they're able to put that in with the processing power of the console that's coming out, not just the dev kit, but you know the console itself, and they don't have to scale back anything, if it's going to have all that kind of stuff, you're not just dealing with the preview and the pre-alpha tech demo presentation for the announced trailer, you're also then looking at a very strong game potentially coming out. So then when Live 22 comes out next year, it's going to have to make that debut and that next-gen debut and not just look next-gen, but compete with that game that's come out and has already perhaps really impressed people, and people really enjoyed that first game on the generation, it's so much pressure. It is hard to remain optimistic for Live at this point, and it's a shame because, as we've said before, we do need those at least two sim games in the gaming space, the basketball gaming space, because the things that 2K has done, they've been able to coast on some of these legacy issues, the lack of matchmaking, the aggressive push on microtransactions, recurrent revenue, and things they've done there, without a viable competitor, a viable alternative to keep that in check, and vice versa. If Live was on top right now, Live would absolutely be doing the same thing with microtransactions, right?
Oh my God! Well, that's the thing we talked about. This is, do we really expect that EA Sports, in good faith, would be better in that way in microtransactions and some of the practices that NBA
not
does?
At all.
Really? Of course not. Of course not.
So. If Live was on top, it would be the same situation. So it's not an anti-2K thing. Again, it's an anti-practice of the gaming industry thing that's really the situation that we're looking at. So if we do need that competition there to keep each other honest, to provide alternatives so that they can't just get away with this kind of stuff. And that is something that also, again, as we said before, does keep the door open for NBA Live. But it really is... They are really going to have to bring it because we're seeing what 2K is doing. We're giving a glimpse of what they're going to do on this next generation. If they can bring some new tech to the table, obviously we have some things that we're skeptical about and cynical about, even looking at that trailer. But there's obviously some very impressive things about it as well. If it is built from the ground up and they have finally been able to harness more next-gen tech, as they say, next-gen power, to be able to have more live ball physics, to have less canned moments... Then that is what Live is going to be competing with, and if Live does feel like it's a generation behind, much as it felt like Live 14 and 15 etc. the last generation felt like it was somewhere between 360 and PS3 and PS4 and X1, it was kind of mired between those generations as far as the tech is concerned. That's not going to do it, and already 2K is getting off to a pretty impressive start, at least looking at general reactions to the trailer. So it's an even bigger hole that Live has to really buckle down and really get everything right as they launch on this generation. Because they haven't had a strong launch on a new generation since PlayStation 2, basically.
EA doesn't make Live a priority, and that's obvious.
Yeah, which they is don't a shame.
Make, I mean, that's shame, that's shame, very. Yeah. I mean, it's very obvious because you can tell that they make Madden a priority. You can tell they make FIFA a priority.
Yeah.
But NBA Live
even
is,
NHL seems to be more of a priority.
NHL, yeah. ESPN is I keep saying ESPN, I don't know why that's on my mind. EA Sports has not made NBA Live a priority for a long time. So
it's and remains to be seen. I mean they're talking about the new there's rumors floating around of new tech that they're using or might be looking into for NBA Live, which if it comes to fruition, there's that tech demo that, which I'm sure you've seen at some point. It's been floating around on social media. Look, if they can harness that, then that may be some very next-gen tech that does get NBA Live, push it forward to where it needs to be. So many questions there. And that is the difference, again, because there are obviously questions about 2K. We've talked about the legacy issues there. But with that being said, I still do believe that the 2K21 next-gen is very likely to launch in a very strong state. Unless it does go back to what 2K14 did and we lose full roster editing, and if they do something weird with the modes, if something gets taken out as when they've built it up from the ground up, if we lose a staple, like we lose standalone playoffs mode again or something, or again full roster editing, like we did with 2K14 next gen, or 2K14 PS4 X1, that is something that we talk about how Live lost a lot of depth coming to this last generation. Or the current generation, which it absolutely did, much more than 2K. But 2K14, for all the strong things it did with Eco Motion and the graphical enhancements, the OMG trailer, making people say OMG, and then it translated to the full game, which again was very impressive. But 2K14 was very bare bones compared to the last-gen version of 2K14, which is another reason why people did like the PC version being the port, not just the modding, but also it was... more well-rounded product, but for all the other improvements on the next-gen version of 2K14, It was surprisingly bare bones. Again, not as much as Live, but comparatively to, given what it was in the on the last gen version and what we'd been getting for the past generation. In any event, that is something that they need to avoid this time around, and hopefully they have, as when they talk about being built from the ground up, that hopefully some things have been left out of the blueprints, but I am also hoping that they haven't left out some other things that were that we had to wait for 2K15 to get.
Yeah, exactly. That was kind of another one of my concerns when they used the terminology built from the ground up, is, you know, are we just talking, you know, when you say built from the ground up, they're going to obviously, I'm guessing, you know, revamp all the menu systems and, and possibly, they're going to have to, edit the edit player menus and all that stuff. It makes me worried that they may, like you said, almost come out like 2K14, where it was very limited as far as options, editing options, customization options, modes and all of that stuff. So that definitely worries me a little bit. We'll see what happens, because I don't want to lose my league. You know what I mean? I don't want to lose my deep my league and my options and my customization options and being able to create jerseys and courts in my league, and all of that stuff. I don't want to lose that.
Definitely.
So hopefully they come out strong as far as like having a complete product. And obviously that's something that Live has failed at for a very long time now. Coming out with a deep product, deep modes, enough modes, customization and stuff like that. So, we'll see what happens. I don't think 2K is going to come out flat in that regard. But I want to bring something up, and you brought up Eco Motion several times, and that was like right in your face during the preview system season for NBA 2K14.
Yep.
And then it says powered by Eco Motion when you get into the game. When you put on 2K14. But if you really look at it, and this is just more of like another marketing thing, play NBA 2K14 for the PC, which is based on last gen, and then play NBA 2K14 for Xbox One and PS3. And the way the players move and the way they dribble, the options, when you're in the post and all of that stuff, all of that is basically the same between both.
Yeah.
The gameplay is almost identical. As far as, what you can do, the options, the authenticity part and all of that stuff. So I have to kind of laugh at the Eco Motion thing, because at the same time where, the game looked great as far as like the motion in general, like the gameplay, I don't see very many differences at all to the 2K14 PC port.
Well, you go back to my interview with Rod Redekop, former programmer on NBA Live from 95 through 2001, and I asked him on that podcast what was the whole thing behind Virtual Stadium Technology, which is something you see in 96 through to 98, those three games there built on Virtual Stadium Technology, and he said it was pretty much just a marketing thing. It was just the name that was given to the fact that they were able to get some more 3D modeling into the game for the arenas and whatnot, that it wasn't really a new engine or a new tech as such. Eco Motion, as far as I'm aware, was a new engine, but it goes back to what we said at the top of the show, is that they have a way of doing things, EA and 2K both, that even when they have a new engine, new tech to work with, they're going to design things in a similar way. They're going to reuse certain assets. And one big thing I remember about Eco Motion that they said was that no animation is going to look the same, quite the same twice. And maybe it's a very subtle difference, in which case it's probably a good thing that it's not exaggerated, if indeed that was the case. But I've never really felt that playing 2K14. You've played a bit more of 2K14 next gen than I have. I've been playing it a bit recently with an eye to doing some more retrospectives and features. Obviously, it's starting to get nostalgic, being the start of the last generation. It's ripe for Way Back Wednesday features and whatnot, and other features looking back at aspects of changing generations and whatnot. But I've never really noticed that supposed differentiation in animations, that the idea that you might see the same animation is not going to play out quite the same each time. It's if it does, it's such a subtle difference that I've never noticed it, which I guess is good on one hand, because you don't want it to look odd and oddly different every time. But I really feel like they might have oversold that one. And certainly it's one of those things that you come up with a name for marketing, and seeing some of the other things they haven't been very forth, you know, exactly forthcoming about and truthful about even, then I don't know. Have you noticed a difference like that? Because that was a big thing that they mentioned. You know, this is the big new tech for Ego Motion, and yet I never really noticed it.
No, I think obviously they were just selling stuff. I think one of the things I want to point out is, if you remember correctly, NBA 2K14 didn't have any size ups.
Yeah,
and couldn't drop step dunk, and the post game was generic. And let's say you use Chris Paul and Jeff Teague, there's not like a big difference between using them, and they don't have like authenticity that's really attached to them outside of their signature shots. So, I think that that's, again, just good marketing. I'm not saying that there wasn't some authentic aspects of it. There were some signature dunks, like Kobe has some signature dunks in there. There's signature shots and stuff like that, but no size ups. Dribbling feels the same for a lot of the different players. So I can't agree with, you know, that it being completely accurate. You know what I mean?
And you are right. The PC 360 PS3 version does feel very much very similar to... I mean, I feel like there's some differences in that in the Eco Motion version, but I don't think they mocapped a whole range of new animations, because there are, you can see familiar animations. In fact, you look at that dunk in the NBA 2K21 trailer. That dunk is in the current gen. That dunk by Zion, and obviously it is pre-alpha and everything, but the thing is, you can't overhaul everything in 12 months, or I'm guessing they've been working on it in the background for more than that with a dev kit, but you don't just throw out animations, and obviously life hasn't as well, because you can see animations that have been in the game for years and a couple of generations now. You're not just going to throw out everything. There is going to be overlap. There is going to be the signatures of the design signatures, I guess, the blueprints, you know, that is their fingerprint, that is their style, that even when they get the new tech, it's going to turn out the same way, and especially if it's using some of the same assets.
Well, I got to bring something up. I got to love the whole mocap thing. So we've been seeing mocap all the way back to, like, Live 2001 with, like, Kevin Garnett, right?
Even earlier, with 96.
Even earlier. Yeah, like, you know, we're seeing, like, you know, the guys in the – they're in the gym, and they have, like, the black balls on them and all of that stuff, and they're wearing the mocap suit. And they're doing all these moves, and then you get in the game, and you're like, wait a minute, this is mocap? The whole thing with mocap that I never understood is, you're literally, I know you have technology that, you know, you mocap the player and then it goes into the computer and then you can put it into the game and you have to use the game's technology in order to make it like move right and work right and all of that stuff. But I just, the mocap, like, I just don't understand why we don't have more authenticity in the games when we have mocap. Does that make sense? Like, I don't understand why.
Well, yeah, that and face scanning.
So much. Exactly, and face scanning. But mocap, like, I don't understand why we don't even have more authenticity now going into, you know, with 2K20 and all of that stuff, and why animations are so generic throughout the league, and how things don't look realistic a lot of times with movement and all of that stuff. Like the running. Like, look at the way the players run on 2K20. You're telling me that mocap, like, player, you couldn't mocap players running up and down the floor and make running animations look realistic? These guys, the running animations in NBA 2K20 with this technology, how can they look like that? We've seen how they look. They don't look realistic at all. So, you know, I keep hearing mocap, and we've been seeing mocap all the way back, like you said, until into the 90s and all of that stuff. But still, there's so many things that boggle the mind animation-wise.
A little bit of trivia, actually. Eventually, Sean O'Brien, of course, became the executive producer of NBA Live, but he was I believe Nerval Thomas, who was on the team as well under Sean O'Brien, they did mocap for NBA Live 96. So that's how we got his start.
So see, there you go. Yeah, I think when I first started, like, really seeing it, though, was I want to say that it was Live 2001. I want to say it was the preview season for that, or when you first got the game. Remember, they actually show...
Oh, in the intro of 2001 actually does show Kevin Garnett in the suit, yeah.
In the suit, yeah, exactly. And that's when I really started noticing the mocap stuff and hearing a lot about it, I want to say, is, like, Live 2001. But yeah,
I mean, more, like, animations, single... too. That's when you really started seeing the real... No signature animations that early, but you saw more differentiation or a wider variety of animations, I should say, around about that time were starting to come in, because you've got the more powerful consoles coming along, more powerful PCs. So it was when you really started to see where mocap might have actually started to make it look like a real, you know. And then, of course, signature shots coming along around in the mid-2000s, when you started to see mocap actually really make a difference. But perhaps, as you say, not as much as you would think.
Yeah, exactly. And I just, like I said, there's still animations that blow my mind. You know, we're on PlayStation 4, and the, like, some of the running animations, the dribbling animations, the way players change direction, the spinning into the post, in the post, and all of that stuff. There's just, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, considering the technology that we have, basically.
Well, you know, you brought this up on Twitter recently. Just this past week, actually, the NBA Ballers, which is a game that I picked up recently, the PlayStation 2 version, the original NBA Ballers, wanted to do a Way Back Wednesday on it at some point. And the faces of that game are very much ahead of what Live or 2K were doing at the time. It's interesting, again, we've talked about differences between games and what certain games do better. And obviously there is some difference with that game, in so much as you can have different faces in the menus or whatnot, possibly. And even in gameplay, you don't have the full 5-on-5, so you can dedicate more processing power to that higher quality texture and model. But it is interesting that some companies really push, some games have really been able to harness that the power of each generation. The wrestling games were the same. That they really, because you had fewer wrestlers in the ring than you never had the 5-on-5 of the never had 10 players plus referees and other moving parts in the crowd. You had in fact the crowd in those wrestling games was even more primitive than the basketball games at the time. But the models of the wrestlers, just as the models of the players in NBA Ballers, really pushed the limits of the PS2 that sixth generation consoles. So we do see that from time to time, and it really does don't come down to the techniques used, as well as things like, you know, being just a one-on-one game as opposed to 5-on-5. But we have seen the way that certain games really squeeze as much as they can out of the technology. A classic example that you and I can both relate to would be Donkey Kong Country on the Nintendo 64. Looked nothing like most Super Nintendo, rather. Nintendo 64 graphics have definitely aged. Donkey Kong 64, Donkey Kong Country on the Super Nintendo, I should say. It is getting late at night, people, when I'm recording this. It really pushed the limits of the chips in the chipset of the Nintendo, of these, just gonna say it again, of the Super Nintendo, that you got some really good 3D graphics that indeed when the Nintendo 64 came along, its 3D graphics, the polygons of those games, didn't look as good as you know, Donkey and Diddy and Dixie and whatnot on the Super Nintendo.
What's crazy is, you know, people were trying to say the thing with NBA Ballers. They were like, well, they weren't fully animated faces. That's actually not true. So I'm playing NBA Ballers, and the players blink. They open their mouths. They turn their heads. They are animated faces. And I want to point something out. It's not the difference in quality between NBA Ballers' faces and games at the time from NBA Live and NBA 2K is staggering. The quality is that much better. Those faces, like the Jermaine O'Neal and NBA Ballers, the face itself is literally looks like it's better quality than faces we get in Elton Brand than we get on the now generation, like an actual quality accuracy of the faces than we get now.
Oh, but no sweat.
Yeah, exactly. But like,
You're right, how good the faces are.
And the thing is they are animated faces. One thing I want to point out to, you know, people who are saying that too, I want you to think about something. Look at the contour of Dirk Nowitzki's face in those older games and other players. It's not about just having like the great actual face on the player, like an accurate looking face. The big part of that is the contour of the face, and having a good contour on the face isn't going to take up more like you're talking about graphical power, right?
Yep.
We're just talking about the shape of the face, and look how poorly the shapes of the faces are on NBA 2K and NBA Live for those older games. They're not even close, like the contour of the faces. So this isn't just about getting, well, people were like, well, it looks like a picture that was draped over a model, which is not the case in my opinion, because like I said, they're fully animated, but it's not even just about that. It's about even just the contour of the face and the attention to detail on the faces. Right. And obviously when there's more, players that you have to worry about, as opposed to on ballers where there's probably only like 40 or 50 total, you know, you have to worry about an entire league. Maybe you don't have the development team to put in the time, right? To make the faces super accurate. But don't tell me that they weren't, like, able to do a better job if they had the development team.
Well, you know, you look at 2K20, how that's benefited from Razer in 2K20.
Yeah, exactly. Right, just having one extra guy to make some faces, and look at the improvements he made to guys like Kevin McHale and whatnot. So I want to make that point that, you know, stop making excuses. Like, you can look at it realistically and say, yes, NBA Live and NBA 2K at the time did have the technology to do better with those faces. But, you know what, maybe they didn't have the development team, maybe they didn't consider that a priority. But, like, we can appreciate what NBA Ballers was able to do.
It really did have ahead of its time graphics, looking at that, you know, and looking at it on a modern TV as well, as opposed to a CRT, which I would have had back when it first came out. You know, you bring up Dirk, and that kind of reminds me that it's funny how there's some players in different games, mind you, that certain games just never look right. Like, people have mentioned that Russell Westbrook, you mentioned NBA Live 16, where he was ironically the cover player, but a lot of people have felt that there's never been a really good Westbrook in 2K, and I think Live's Dirk Nowitzki's have been pretty good. If there's one player that I've felt has never looked good in 2K, it's Dirk.
Dirk looks terrible in 2K pretty much every... The 01, 02, excuse me, the 02 or 03 version that they have of him, the shaggy looking Dirk, that is not a good Dirk Nowitzki cyberface. And the ones that they have in, like, the last couple games, he looks like an old geezer. Like, if he looks, have you seen the more recent, the updated Dirks? They just do not look good, in my opinion. I think he's one player that they rarely get right. I think the best version of Dirk would probably be, like, for the more recent Dirk Nowitzki's, for, like, I would say 2010 up, would probably be, like, the ones in 2K17 and 2K16. But they've never really... But then they ruin those versions, and he looks absolutely terrible in 2K18 through 2K20.
So which do you think is worse? The Dirk in, like, the current last few games, or Larry Bird in 2K18?
Larry Bird.
He does look like some random plumber in that game.
he looks like he's melting. There's something... That looks absolutely nothing like Larry Bird. There is no way you could show that to somebody and say, who is this? You know what I mean? Yeah. And just show the face and they would say Larry Bird. There's no way.
Yeah. So. That's Lonnie Bard, that one. That's a generic roster player that's somehow been masquerading as Larry Bird, number 33 in the Celtics. Yeah, that was bad. They did improve that next year. 2K19, that was a better Bird, at least.
Yeah, 2K19 was a little bit better. 2K16 and 2K17 had pretty, you know, not acceptable Larry Birds, but they were more to his likeness. So,
but again, it's strange how it's just with certain players. Some players, they get really spot on. I think both games get a pretty good LeBron, for example. 2K11 maybe has the best MJ to this day. I think a couple of the ones in recent years have been okay, but they really nailed him in 2K11, which stands to reason, considering that was the year they were bringing him back and doing the Jordan Challenge and everything. But
2K17 was psycho Jordan. 2K17 had the crazy eye Jordan, if you remember. He looked absolutely, like, his eyes were, going towards his nose.
You see that when they did the recreation of the Dream Team, the classic team photo of the Dream Team, and he's standing there in the middle just as he was in the original one, and he's almost cross-eyed. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
he looks absolutely terrible. And then there was there was another one that I wanted to bring up. They never really get David Robinson right. Either. He was really good in 2K17, but that's rare. I think David Robinson looked really good in many games. But there's one guy. Oh, one second. Who is it? There's one guy who they consistently just can never get right. It's
Retro or modern?
I think it's retro. I'm just trying. I was trying to think of it, and I had it. It was on the tip of my tongue, and yeah, I'll have to revisit it. But yeah, no, there's definitely inconsistency with faces, and there's clearly play faces that they struggle with. Like, do you remember the Jamal Crawford in 2K15? He
Not
looked
off the top of
absolutely,
my head, but
oh, yeah. That one was really bad.
and it is strange that it is certain players. I mean, whether they're difficult to model or whether they don't get the face scans. That is something I think that moving forward as well, and why it's so important to have somebody like Razer on there to because of how well he does those retro faces and how amazing those faces are. Because there was when we had that jump to the last gen, to this generation, we did start to see some of the discrepancy between the current and retro players, and some of that I think is that the retro players don't always get the love they should. We've talked about that in a previous show, how the accuracy is important and how it's being mishandled in rosters, whether it's animations that have been assigned or indeed faces or ratings, etc. And of course, it just goes completely to pot in my team when they put out the different overpowered cards and whatnot. But we did see that jump in the generation where players were starting to get their faces scanned, and they were standing out from the retro players where they had to be modeled the old-fashioned way because, of course, well, sadly, some of those players aren't around anymore. They're no longer with us. But even those that are, if they sit and get a scan, you know, a 50-year-old Michael Jordan, if he sits down to get a face scan, is not, or a Patrick Ewing, you know, some as these players are in their mid to 50s to, you know, even 60s now from the players that we grew up watching. The faces aren't going to look the same. You're not going to get that young, you know. If you want to put a Magic Johnson in his prime in there, it's not going to look the same as being able to scan a you know, a current player and have it be accurate, for example, or a Larry Bird or Michael Jordan or anyone who's, you know, in their 50s and 60s now, or older. So even if you can get them to sit for a scan, it's not really viable unless you're putting them in the game as a cameo in my career, as they've done with Kareem and Bill Russell and Scottie Pippen this year, so you can do it that way. So it does stand out, and that's something that's probably going to keep standing out a bit more as we move forward.
Yeah, the player I was thinking of was Iverson in 2K14, in 2K15, and 2K16. He
That's right,
absolutely looked incredible.
and he's their guy. He is Mr. 2K from
It's not
originally.
close. Yeah, it's not even close. It looks terrible. Like, my God, I modded him in 2K16 and made him look a little bit better. But yeah, I can't believe how bad he looks in those games. And then 2K17, they fixed him up. And then he went backwards again in 2K18, 2K19, and 2K20. But yeah, 2K17 is probably the best he's looked. And then, no, I agree. I think the problem is with the tech. You wonder how they screw up that bad. You know what I mean? And like you said, it's good to have. Razer does a great job with guys like, you know, from the past that you can't get, you can't even get good reference photos of, and he somehow makes really good faces. And shout out to Razer. And you know, we have other good retro modders like Mr. Star and others who do a good job of being able to make some of those classic players look good. I've tried, and it's very tough. Like, I made Brent Price, and I think he came out pretty good, but boy, is it tough without a really good reference photo.
ICR for 2K14 does some amazing retro
Oh
faces.
God, he does amazing. Yeah, he does. His Karl Malone is top notch. His younger Karl Malone,
Maravich.
it's amazing. Yep, his yeah, yeah, Maravich
Maravich
from
Mata, yeah.
Modder. He does a great job. I also wondered if he ever made a great Pete Maravich just because of his name. I'd have to look that up. I bet he did.
Well, I would
You
hope
know,
so.
the other
It's
thing.
only appropriate.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, Razer went in and updated Bill Laimbeer for 2K20, who was in sore need of it, and he looks much better. But like you said, they were using like the old textures for a lot of those players, and they still do, like for guys like Brad Sellers and whatnot. But yeah,
And you
it's
are right
crazy.
about David Robinson. I don't think, even going back to PS2, well, we did see some decent faces on PS2, but yeah, you never really saw a great David Robinson in those games.
Yeah, he's a tough guy to make for some reason. But like I said, in 2K17, if you go and look, not only did they get his face really good, but they got his body right as well. So because he was rugged, he's a big guy.
That being said, Live 2000's David Robinson face is pretty good for its time. I mean, as we said before, 2000 has some amazing faces.
Yeah, Live 2000 was really good, like Paul Pierce and whatnot, and Antoine Walker and Jason Williams and stuff. Yeah, so they were good.
The worst Shaq is still Fox Sports NBA Basketball 2000. That is, he looks like LeVar Ball in that game.
Yeah, I mean, Shaq's another guy that 2K hasn't gotten right many times. Remember there's been two where Shaq looks like a baby almost. Like there's just head is shaped like a potato.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Shaq has not been one of 2K's strong points as far as faces go.
And it's very strange. Live Shaq face isn't too bad.
Live 10, actually, we were just talking about this. Live 10, Shaq has a really good face.
But what about Live 18, 19? You don't see it as often because you've got to collect him in Ultimate Team, I suppose. But
yeah, I want to say I saw him in Live 19 and he looked really good. But I'd have to go back and look.
He's
at
in the
it,
demo so. Game at the start. When you got, when
yeah,
you got,
because
when
you do that AI Vince playing on that, yeah. That dark port. Yeah.
Yeah, that one. So yeah, that it from memory looked pretty decent. I have to go back and look at the screenshots. And of course, he's in some live events as well. And you can collect him in court battles. And so that's the other place you can get Shaq in Live 19 because he was one of the spokesmen. He was part of like whatever they called it, Team EA or Team Live or something.
Yeah, I think that one of the questions, too, is when we were going into a new gen, I was wondering if they were actually going to get Barkley on board because he seemed more open to it. You know, we're talking about new gen, new, you know, what are they going to do to promote their game? I was wondering if Reggie Miller or Charles Barkley would come on board. So I'm still waiting to see if they try to make some sort of announcement for that.
It would be huge, obviously, for Retro. And I know they got Barkley a couple of times that he relented for 2K13 and 2K17 for the 20th and 25th anniversary of the Dream Team when they included them in those games, and of course Jay-Z was instrumental in that apparently in 2K12, sorry 2K13 rather in 2012 when they did that. I'd love to see it. I think 2K can certainly afford to meet that request that Charles has had that about making the donation to the Retired Players Association. I think it would be only appropriate considering how much they benefit from, you know, they put those players in my team and have those souped up cards of not just the current players, but also the historical ones. And they make money off those packs and everything. So with all the money they make on that, surely they could do it. It would be appropriate to do and logical to do. And I think they'd end up making more money by having Barkley in the game and Reggie, if he would agree as well, to have them in the game and collectible in my team. You put them in packs, people are going to want to be ripping open those packs to try and get a Barkley and Reggie Miller and Rasheed Wallace as well, because he's, you know, they've got two teams that Rasheed Wallace is in, 2000 Blazers and 2004 Pistons, and he's very conspicuous by his absence, as are, of course, in the all-time teams, Barkley and Miller. But the fact they do have two teams that where he is a key player, you know, they don't have a Retro Pacers or Suns or well, of course they did have the 85-76ers without Barkley, so that was one example that they don't. They've still got the 85-76ers though, haven't they?
No, they don't. Removed them.
They did remove them. That's right, because they lost Moses Malone as well.
The assets are still in the game. They're still in the files. Like you can still get their jerseys, their courts.
Yeah, yeah.
The court and the stadium. And all of that stuff, but yeah, they removed him finally. But you're right, Sheed's a very important player for both of those teams, and so his absence is pretty telling. It's almost like when the Suns, remember, like Steve Nash signed on late, and they got him in the computer late. I mean, got him into the game late. I think this was for I want to say 2K17. You were like using the Suns, using the 0405 Suns without Nash isn't exactly the same.
Well, Ginobili is absent from the Spurs all-time and classic teams because he's no longer at a contract. They can stay in the game for a year after they retire without a further deal, but now that's been more than a year now, so he's gone from that.
Yeah, pretty crazy, right?
It's pretty important. Yeah.
super important player.
It's funny because we're starting to see some of those more recent teams and players that have retired more recently. They're the ones that we're missing. Like you go back and you look at any of the 90s Bulls teams in NBA 2K, they've been pretty much intact the whole time. They've still got all the major players, still got, you know, your big three as well as a lot of the bench players. It's the players that have been retiring recently that they've lost the rights to. Like you say, 2K17 would have been 16 or 17, yeah, that they brought Nash back, added him back to the Suns and the Mavericks teams that they added. I think 17, you're right.
It was 17.
Yeah. So they've done that. I'm surprised they didn't do that with Ginobili. I was a bit disappointed, obviously, that they didn't do that. They've obviously done it with Duncan. He's still in there. And KG and Kobe. Although with Kobe's passing, there was that the issue. That's why it took so long for them to do the My Team tribute to him, apparently. And who knows what's going to happen there moving forward. And obviously, that is a situation where, I'm not going to begrudge the family whatever decision they make, although I assume he's going to be in the game. There's been a lot of speculation about that, and Zion Williamson is obviously, based on that trailer, quite likely, almost a lock. We can, as we said at the top of the show, pretty much assume that he's going to be the main cover player. Do you think they're going to do the Kobe tribute cover for the Legend Edition or a special edition of 2K21?
I think they'd be silly not to. And I also don't think there's going to be any issue with getting his rights. I think that a lot of that type of stuff depends on the family, right? And I think that they're probably going to be reaching out, would you say, probably to Vanessa?
Yeah.
Whatnot. And I think that in this case, and, you know, keeping Kobe's legacy alive in that regard as well, not that it's necessary, but it's, you know, millions and millions and millions and millions of kids play this game.
Yeah.
It gets that many downloads. I think that the family will, you know, want to have him in 2K and all that stuff. It's a different time, right? You know, video games are pretty big and 2K is huge and all that stuff. I think that the family will comply and that they'll want Kobe to be in the game.
And he had obviously had the relationship with 2K as well, being a previous Legend Edition cover player, 2K17 in fact, and a main cover player for 2K10. So it is quite likely, and it will be, as we said, he'll live on in that way and, you know, continue to celebrate his career on the virtual hardwood. There's some players that I wonder if we'll ever see, like a Jason Williams, that's with Jason Williams with a Y, Mookie Blaylock, etc., and so forth.
They've kept Eddie Johnson, you know, the point guard Eddie Johnson from the Hawks. They've kept him in the game for years, and he's been in prison.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point.
So it's interesting.
I did see an article. It might have been Brian Mazeek. It might have been somebody else. Brought up how it's obviously a no-brainer to have Kobe as the as a Legend Edition cover of 2K21 if they go that way. Brought up the how it's a no-brainer, but maybe would also be seen as perhaps a bit gauche, a bit like trying to cash in on the tragedy. And I think that's a fair point. I think if we don't see Kobe as the cover player of a Legend Edition this year of 2K21, it will be out of sensitivity. But if I had to make a prediction, and might as well, since it is the previous season that's dawning now, I see that point, but I do think that it's more likely that people will see it as a respectful gesture and that it will go ahead. It certainly makes sense to do it. I mean, there's always, we talk about cynicism, and it is easy to get cynical about gestures like that, but at the same time, I think people do want to pay tribute. He obviously does have that that history with 2K and being as popular as he is, and considering the tragedy, it does. I think the appropriateness of the gesture will outweigh any potential controversy.
I mean, it also it's part of 2K's content. It's like, it's not like they're not a basketball title, right? Not an NBA title. Not an NBA title that recognizes retro. They already do that. So yeah, it's not like they're going out of bounds or like trying to, do something that they haven't done before, right?
Yeah.
They're Kobe's been in the game since 2K has been around. He's been in every video game. And it's, in my opinion, it's not out of bounds to, you know, put him in the game and put a mode with him in it, possibly.
Oh, definitely if they do that. I think it's more the idea that it'd be pushing the sales of the more expensive Legend Edition, whether that would be seen as...
Oh, it's that, yeah. I mean, if they added, like, extra prices on it.
But the Legend Edition is the more expensive edition. I think that was the point that was being made in the article, that it's kind of...
It's not like the Legend... Right, but the Legend Edition has always been that way. So I think that's the difference. If they, like... Instead, you know how they do the Legend Edition for a certain price? Let's say they went $20 to $30 above that price and put Kobe on the front. And said, you know, they started charging more for it. I think that would be different.
Yeah,
it's not like
that would be bad. Yeah, that would be. I would hope they would, for all some of the missteps they've made with goodwill and you know, aggressiveness with the recurrent revenue and whatnot. I think they would have the good taste not to do that. That would be a bit. That would definitely be on the nose.
Yeah, I agree. But I think they would be absolutely silly not to, you know, show appreciation. See, and that's the way I look at it is, you know, showing appreciation for what he did for the game, for his career, and all of that stuff, and getting kids to be able to appreciate that. You know what I mean?
Agreed.
I think that's the way to look at it more. So
I mean, that's, I guess, pretty much all there is to say about what we've had already. I mean, we'll leave it to the YouTubers to pick apart the 1 minute trailer more than we have. The sweaty trailer, as it always is as is tradition with next gen trailers. But it has given us our first glimpse of the game. We do know that it is coming out. That they are going to make it a launch title, obviously, for the new generation consoles that are coming out later this year. As we begin to get into a preview season now, I mean, it's probably going to be a few more weeks before we see all the things that were censored in that second hype video, which is, again, I think one of the things that bothers me, and I think bothers you about it too, that it's a lot of talk about, you know, vague promises of announcements to come that we're probably not going to see until maybe you know, certainly later in July or maybe even August at the earliest. What do you want to see next from the previous season?
I think because we always don't get we don't get gameplay until closer to launch. I would say that announcements of what we're keeping for modes and content and customization. So I'd like to know, you know, they said built from the ground up, but I'd like to know, are we keeping all of the same, you know, options that we have? What if so, and if we're keeping those same options, you know, maybe tell us a couple of the new options that we're also getting. But yeah, I think that would be the next thing for me, because I know that we're not going to get more gameplay, like actual 5-on-5 gameplay, or any, until, you know, we're closer to launch.
September, October, you know, depending on the consoles come out, maybe even November, if they're coming out in December this time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it could, like we had talked about, you know, and like you just mentioned, it could be even further out because of the NBA season delay. So
I'd like to see some snippets here and there, more tech demos if they have them. Certainly I want to see those in-depth blogs where they're talking about, as you said, you know, absolutely agree with that, what they're keeping, what built from the ground up actually means. We are going to have to sift through some of the marketing you know, BS, you know, to be quite honest. We're going to have to take some things with a grain of salt, but it'll also be good to hear about that kind of stuff, and see a few snippets leading up to the full raw gameplay that we would like to see. And again, probably won't come out till much later in the year. And this preview season probably is again going to go right into November at the you know, at the earliest of, you know, of those releases based on the previous generation console. Well, I mean, they say fall 2020, so, you know, November, you know, the end of that. At least in the Northern Hemisphere, that's the end of spring here, obviously. One thing that I'm kind of sick of in the previous season that I really don't care about, and I think it also drives a problem with rosters and ratings and my team and everything else, is the release of overall rating screenshots. I'm kind of sick of them.
Yeah, but that's going to be a big part of it, and it's going to be like an thing on social media, and the bickering back and forth with players is going to be a big thing again, and it's going to help promote the game, whether it's negative or positive, whether it's like Malik Monk coming out and saying I should be a higher rating. That's still publicity for the game. That's still advertising for the game.
Yep.
That's still something that, you know, 2K knows they can lean on. You know, think about the generation of players that are playing right now. What did they grow up with? They all grew up playing, you know, 2K, right?
Yeah.
So this is, you have a league full of players that are playing NBA 2K. I would honestly say that the large majority of the league plays NBA 2K. They're all eyes are going to be on it. They're going to be commenting on it, doing commentary on it. It's the perfect storm for NBA 2K.
It is. It is a juggernaut in so many ways. It has the NBA 2K League, of course, which is resumed play. It's in, I believe, week 6 or 7 now. And, you know, that's being shown on ESPN Australia. I believe it's being shown on ESPN over there. It has become that pop culture icon, the 2K Live. Live was pretty big back in the days, at least in the basketball gaming space, of course, and even with NBA players. You know, I went back, I did that way back Wednesday about the summer camp and the draft camp for NBA Live 08 during the previous season. You had quite a few big names and prominent players and young players alike talking about how they'd grown up playing NBA Live. That has all shifted now to 2K, and it has just gone. You know, the fact it's top 5 million sales with 2K11, and then it's just gone from strength to strength in the years since. It is a juggernaut. It is a pop culture icon. It has become the generic brand. Just as somebody may have said, NBA Live, you know, referring to all basketball games back in the day, kind of like how some people refer to all professional wrestling as WWE, or perhaps more accurately WWF, its old initials. Many people still use its old initials there. You know, people say 2K, and they're not necessarily aware of Live, or they only know Live as the struggling wannabe competitor to NBA 2K, which is, as we've said before, is a real shame. They're going to have to bring it as the new generation looms. 2K is still going to have to deliver, of course, because not everything about the last few games has been perfect. We've talked about those legacy issues right here on this episode, in fact. But it will be interesting to see, and I guess we're in for another fun ride. One final point, I suppose. What are your expectations for last gen? I mean, that's going to be interesting because they still have modes. I would like, you know, my team and everything that get content. It's going to be interesting to see what those last gen versions get, and especially if there's a last gen on PC as well. But certainly for those last gen consoles, I don't see them being phased out for at least a couple of years. You know, maybe different this time around, but I would, you know, not everyone does get the new generation straight away, so they'd be foolish not to get those extra sales from the existing user base on those platforms. That, you know, what will be last gen come later this year. What do you think will happen with those? I mean, they're going to become an afterthought, but I imagine this first year is probably going to be reasonably strong, and then next year it just kind of becomes the afterthought.
I think they're going to shorten the cycle. I think that, you know, they released all the way up to like 2K18 on PS4.
Yep.
So they did that, like, you know, like 4 years out or whatever. I think that you're only going to see maybe this year and next year. That's my opinion. If next year at all, I think that they're the push is going to be, you know, for everybody to be getting the new consoles. I think it's a different time period, in the world and with tech and all of that stuff. So in my opinion is the biggest thing is 2K21 is probably going to have basically the same gameplay bones as 2K20 for PS4. And then they're going to also, and the same modes, same options, all of that stuff, similar menus possibly, maybe a slightly different scoreboard. And then at the same time, they're going to shorten the life cycle of those games on PS4.
I think that's a pretty accurate, you know, a pretty good prediction. It's like you say, it's very different. The fact that they would have to keep pushing through new content for a last-gen game if they're doing things like My Team, which I can't see them taking out, because obviously that's if people are sticking around on that platform for a couple of years, that generation, then they're going to want to make that recurrent revenue through My Team and My Career, etc., with VC sales. So there's, as long as the servers are up for those games, of course. So, but that's still manpower, that's still effort and time and resources they have to put into content to come through for a last-gen game. So and that's become a much bigger thing than it was, because I think, what was the first game with My Career? Sorry, not My Career, My Team was, I think, 2K13, and only on console, not on PC. Certainly the first game with VC sales as well. So, and it actually was the first game with My Career as well. My Player became My Career in 2K13. When they did the whole my branding, TM. It makes sense that I don't think they want to do 4 or 5 years of still supporting that game, because that'll be what, over 10 years of supporting though that generation then, which they did with previous games, and I think what 2K11 was the last game that came out on PS2 as well. So they were doing PS2 for a while into that generation.
2K12, actually.
2K12? Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, so they were doing that for a while. It seems less likely with the upgrades and what they want to get people onto the new consoles and everything, and having to push through new My Team content and to differentiate. If they have to push through different content on different platforms and say this code is for next gen and this is the last gen, I don't think they want to be doing that for too many years. So I think you're right. I think we're looking at maybe 1 or 2 years, three tops, and that seems, you know, that would what take us through about 10 years of support on that generation for those games. So it seems unlikely, and yeah, what we can expect is, I guess, 2K20.5 on last gen. What will be last gen?
Yeah, that's exactly what I think is going to end up happening. Because they're not going to be dedicating the same amount of time and resources, and they already have the bones in place, so.
And you know, you go back and you look at the previous seasons. I think the last previous season where they really released anything for both platforms, both you know, PS4 and X1, and then PS3 and 360, was 2K15. So even if they support it for a couple of years beyond that, we're not really going to hear about it. There's not going to be much support. There's not going to be much promotion this year, I suppose, because the last gen version may come out earlier. We might hear a bit more about last gen this year, as we did with 2K14. But yeah, it's a throwaway society with everything, and you know, you don't get things repaired. You buy new ones, and certainly everyone's looking for the latest phone, the latest upgrade, the latest version of Android or whatever. So it's all about getting to the latest version these days. So yeah, you know, it's you know, we're starting, I guess we'll see the sunset, the twilight of PS4 and X1.
I mean, it's exciting, right? I mean, it's all of it's kind of exciting, like
It is.
getting
I mean,
2K20
as
and
cynical
hearing what
and
they're doing. It's exciting, so.
cynical and skeptical as I may be from years of being as both a consumer and a content creator who's covered the previous seasons, there's still something exciting about seeing it. And you know, there is that anticipation. You know, as critical as we can be of the games, we don't want to have these criticisms. You know, I'd much rather be able to say, you know what, I can't say a damn thing about this. I can't say a damn thing that's bad about this game. You know, you couldn't pay me to crap on this game because it's you know, it's good. I'd love it to be that way. That's a very high goal, very lofty goal. But you know, I'd rather be proven wrong about these things, and because that means we're going to get a great product. But there is always that potential for improvement, especially as we head into a new generation. So yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's again, it's going to be a, as always, a fun and interesting ride.
Yeah, and I think these podcasts are just going to continue to get better and better the more we get more information as well. I think it's going to be fun to talk about, to dissect. So.
So certainly will be, and we invite you all to join us for that ride. As always, with the preview season, because there are lulls. With news coming some weeks and not others. Obviously, there was a lot to talk about this week with the 2K21 announcement trailer and everything else that all the discussion that stirs up. In between then, we will continue to have our different discussion topics related to basketball gaming, as we've been doing. That's how we will fill the gaps in between there being news. And when there's a lot of news, obviously, that will take precedence over that. And any interviews we do, of course, will be scattered in there as well. But yeah, it's... You know, like you said, Derek, we're going to have a lot to talk about in the coming weeks and months.
Fun times.
One way
I
or the
look
other,
forward to this.
we'll have something to talk about, whether it is the previous season or whatnot. But yes, in the meantime, that's brought us to the end of this week's episode. So it's over to you now. Let us know your thoughts on the announcement trailer, what we've been talking about as far as legacy issues, your expectations for next gen, everything like that, and you know, reflections on the past generation, whatever you'd like to talk about, and you know, we want to hear your thoughts on the topics that we covered this week. Let us know in the comments section on the main page. You can also let us post in the forum. Hit us up on social media on our various channels, which we'll be promoting shortly. Want to hear from you about that, and of course, any topic suggestions are also welcome. The NLC podcast, of course, comes out each and every week on the NLSC, which is nb-live.com. We're also on pretty much every podcatching app and platform, I believe. The ones that we usually promote are Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher, some of the biggest ones, but we are on other platforms as well. Once again, if you can't find us on your favorite podcatching app or platform, let me know and I'll submit the RSS feed. That's usually all it takes to get us on there. It comes out every Sunday evenings Australian time. As we always say, as long as you're tuning in each and every week and enjoying the show, that is the main thing. And of course, feel free to leave us a review on any platforms that allow that, such as Apple Podcasts. Helps out with visibility. And of course, as always, stroking our ego. Before I promote the NLSC socials, D, where can we find you?
Find me on Twitter at D4384, on YouTube, D43, over at the NLVC, and obviously on the NLSC. I'm a contributor over there and as D43.
And of course, I will do my best to tag the right account this week. And if not, I guess I'll...
Like we said, we're not getting many followers. So.
No, but we are getting some new followers ourselves and new listeners, and that is very much appreciated. You can follow the NLSC on Twitter at the NLSC, or also the NLSC on Facebook. Like us there on Instagram, where we also post various updates about our news articles and features and some other fun things as well. On Instagram, we are NLSC Basketball. On YouTube, we are NBA Live Series Center. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself. Once again, that is NBA-Live.com for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that is all for episode number 327 of the NLSC podcast. Thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.